Welcome back. I'm Sandeep Roy, and this is Your Call. Is it any accident that the Constitution of the United States allows no person younger than 35 years of age to run for president? There's something we inherently honor about the talent and experience that comes with age. But what exactly is happening inside our minds as we get older that helps us make decisions, manage stressful situations, and keep perspective? Today's guest, Barbara Strouch, has a few answers. She's the author of The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind. She says that the middle-aged brain is a bit slower than in youth. In our 40s and 50s, we may start forgetting people's names and where we put the car keys, but our brains make up for that by more calmly managing emotions and information, by being more nimble, more flexible, even cheerier. How? We use both sides of our brain simultaneously more often as we age. We continue to grow myelin, the white matter in our brains that protects and holds networks of nerves together. We can more quickly identify a good decision from a bad one. And we've trained our brains, Strouch says, to react to the world more positively. The question now is, what will current and future generations of middle-agers do with their improved minds? In a society set up for a half-step between retirement and a nursing home, how can we reimagine uses for this extra brain power? And in a culture that disdains the aging process, how can we resurrect respect for the talents of the middle-aged mind? Barbara Strouch is Deputy Science and Health Editor for the New York Times, and she's been a reporter and editor for more than 30 years, 15 of those with the Times. And she's the author of a previous book on teenage brains called The Primal Teen, and she joins us by phone from New York. Thank you for joining us, Barbara Strouch.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I wanted to make sure it's Strouch, right, and not Strouch.
That's fine.
And we also wanted to invite you to join the conversation. Do you have or do you know a middle-aged mind? What do you see as its strengths and weaknesses? If you're between the ages of 40 and 70, how does your mind compare to your younger years? And what are your fears about aging? Do you feel optimistic for your middle-aged years? Join the conversation with Barbara Strouch at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or by email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Barbara, to get it started, I mean, you spoke with many scientists as well as many of your middle-aged friends in researching this book. So who exactly is considered middle-aged these days?
Well, it's a good question because it's kind of a moving target. You mentioned 40 to 70, and I think that's about it. You know, remember at the turn of the century, average age spans were only 48, and now their average is up to 80. So we now have, for the very first time as a human species, this long time in the middle age, which is long and new, and we're all entering it much healthier than anybody ever imagined.
Well, you write in the book that middle age is, in fact, a far more important time for our brains than anyone ever suspected. Why is that?
Well, they talk about the brain in middle age as being on the cusp, and this is where they see more variability than at any other time in our lives, actually. This is when brains sort of diverge, and what you do in middle age is considered now quite important for how you enter old age. And they think that you can still influence your brain. It's still developing in middle age, and some are going the right direction and some are not.
So the old idea was as soon as you are in middle age, you're basically shedding neurons like dandruff.
Yes, exactly. The old idea was, and it's not that long ago, that they still thought that we lost as many as 30% of our neurons as we aged, our brain cells. And now that they've gotten the tools to go in there and actually look at the actual brains, they find that's not true.
So we don't lose neurons?
We lose a few, and we lose branches, the things that come off the neurons. But basically, our brain cells stay with us and stay intact throughout our lives, and that's incredibly encouraging.
Well, what kind of things can a middle-aged brain do that's better than a teenage brain, since you've studied both now?
Right. Well, teenage brains, we know, are a little crazy. But I think in adolescence, you know, you're still developing the capacity to plan ahead, to see consequences of your actions and things. And by middle age, we're pretty good at that. We can. You have a friend who's a doctor, and she says in her 50s, she walks into a hospital room, and she can immediately size up a situation. I think we get the gist of an argument better. We see the big picture better, and we're better at judging character, good guy, bad guy. Even some researchers at Harvard have done worldwide studies to find out that people make the best financial decisions in middle age.
You mean all those bankers on Wall Street who let us
Okay. They were younger.
Okay, we'll put it down to the teenage brain part.
There you go. It's a culture of teenage brains.
But you know, these things that you're talking about, your friend who walks into the hospital and can size things up better, you know, we put that down to maturity, experience, wisdom, things like that. So are you saying that there is sort of a neurological basis to that, as opposed to, you know, we think of that much more as just experience?
Right. Well, I think we've used that word as kind of a cliched word, and same with wisdom. And what's happened now is that the brain scientists have gotten in there, and they're looking to see, okay, what do we mean by that? What is actually changing in our brains to make them function better in middle age? And they find, as you mentioned earlier, in some cases, the really good, sharp brains start using more of themselves, two sides, or they go up and grab this very elite part of their brain, the frontal cortex, right behind their foreheads. And when they have to solve a problem, people who are the cognitively stars, really, they go up and use more of their brains if they need to. They also find that there's growth of this myelin again, and this white matter of the brain continues to increase into our 60s, and this makes the connection stronger. So what we have is a buildup of connection through a lifetime of being in situations, but we also have these physical changes in our brains that they kind of reorganize in middle age.
So tell us, what actually does happen to the brain as it ages?
Well, there's a couple of some bad things. They think on average it shrinks maybe 2% a decade. They do think that there's a decline in neurotransmitters a little bit, and certainly our short-term memories, for reasons that are a little bit unknown, kind of wane a little bit. But that doesn't mean that that matters all that much. The trade-off and what we get in the other side is much more important, I think. We get this ability to connect the dots, you know, to see how things fit together. And I have a friend, actually, who's a poet in her 50s, and she said she didn't think until she was in her 50s that she could actually make poetry, because that was the only time she saw how all the pieces of the world fit together. And those are the kinds of brains we have in middle age that I think we need to appreciate a little better.
And this thing that I started with, which I think many people listening can relate to, this forgetting somebody's name at a party, or where did you put down the car key? I know I had the car keys right here. Where did they go? What you're saying here is that it's not that we forgot that information, it's that we're having a harder time retrieving it.
Exactly. That information is in there. There's a woman at Pomona College who's done really good studies on what she calls tip-of-the-tongue phenomenon. You know, when you meet somebody, you really know their name, you know their name, but you can't quite recall it. And she's done these great studies where they, if you're trying to remember, for instance, Brad Pitt's name, which is kind of hard to believe, but if you are and can't quite bring it to mind, if someone sort of randomly later on says Cherry Pitt to you, that name will kind of pop up into your mind. And so it's
that name's going to pop up is it going to pop up every time you look at a cherry, or?
Oh, well, I think anything that sounds the same, it's really similar sounds. If you're trying to think of the word Velcro, for instance, if someone randomly later on says pellet to you, even those internal sounds, the L, will prompt that word Velcro to come into your mind. And I think we all experience that. We think by magic that we're walking along and that word, that name we're looking for, it kind of pops up into our brains. And that means it's in there. It's just, again, as you said, a retrieval issue. And it takes a little bit more to prime the brain to catch that that name, which are usually random and arbitrary anyway. So to get that random information, we might need a little bit of more help.
So is there research being done about how we can retrieve this better, or do we just have to get used to the fact that the retrieval is going to get harder and harder?
Well, no, there's things you can do. No, there's some tricks you can try. For instance, they suggest, there's one I love that says if you try to remember to watch a certain program or call somebody later on in the day, you can, the best way you can do that is to imagine yourself doing it. And that kind of visualization creates what they call a bigger neural footprint in your brain, which means there's more parts of your brain that are activated and later on will help you get to that memory.
It doesn't work the other way. I mean, I sometimes think I've sent people an email, but I only have thought I've sent
them.
I actually haven't done it.
Well, that's a very good idea. That's a very good observation, actually. Sometimes our brains can go into, it's not quite exactly that, but what they call the default mode, which is kind of this inner dialogue and daydreaming mode a little bit. And you might be imagining that you're doing something and you haven't actually done it because your brain is not really engaged, So that's the other tip. I think there's some very good work being done in San Francisco there about how we don't, as we age, focus at the very beginning of things. So sometimes the image and the thing we're trying to get into our brains for a millisecond is a little bit off. And so that's the other thing that they tell you to do is basically focus at the beginning when you're really trying to learn a name or, figure out whether you've done something or not, or just pay attention at the very beginning.
And this, you brought up this idea of daydreaming. So is the middle-aged brain, in fact, much more distractible?
Yes, I think so. I mean, but starting in middle age and going into older age, they do find that we're a little bit less good at blocking out distractions. And that's the job, again, of our prefrontal cortex right behind our foreheads that sort of keeps us on task. And they do find that on average, of course, not everyone, but on average, that yes, as we go through middle age and into older ages, we have a little bit more trouble blocking out irrelevant information.
Why is that, though? You would think, since you've done the book Primal Teen as well, you think teenagers would be more distracted. They would have all the stimulus coming from everywhere. They're trying to, text message at the same time as do 13 other things. Mm-hmm. Why is the middle-aged brain more distractible?
Well, again, it all roads point back to the prefrontal cortex, this area, as I said, right behind our foreheads. That this is the part that makes us most human, and this is the part that's the last to develop in a teenager. So this is the part that helps us plan ahead and block out irrelevant information, and that is still developing in teenagers. And as we age, that's actually the first part of our brains that gets a little bit dicey, and it may be because it's kind of a price we pay for its plasticity, as they say. It's an area of our brain that is very nimble and flexible and has to adapt very quickly as we learn new things, and that may mean that it takes a little bit more wear and tear, and but that doesn't mean it disappears. And on balance, basically, the people who keep those pathways open to their prefrontal cortex and keep that area alive and active through education or really making your brain work hard. That's really what you want to do, and it's beyond crossword puzzles. You really want to push your brain to use that frontal cortex as much as possible.
That's Barbara Strouch, health editor with the New York Times, and her most recent book is The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind. And when we come back, we'll talk more about the science behind all of this and how you can keep your brain nimble. We'll be joined much more with Barbara Strouch after this break.
I'm Matt Martin, general manager of KALW, here with Your Call producer, Ali Budner. Trying to clear our prefrontal cortexes and asking you to do the same, make that pathway clear and support KALW today. While you're at it, we can send you, as our thanks for your support, The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain from Barbara Strouch, yours for a $70 contribution. It's easy. Either call our Phone room, 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917, or go online to KALW.org.
And we also have a matching pledge today from Susan Boyle in Oakland. She was a volunteer with us in our phone room yesterday, and now she's offered this generous contribution of a $500 matching pledge, which means that every gift that you give during this hour will get doubled by her generosity. So step up. This book is easy to read. It has personal stories, new science. It's fascinating. It's humorous. So 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
When you make that call, when you make that click at KALW.org, you will be supporting intelligent programming that keeps your brain alive and active, that gives you something worth engaging with. That's what public radio is about. And at Your Call, we actually get you involved with your calls. If you've been listening to Barbara Streisand going, wow, I'm thinking about my brain and how it works or doesn't work or how it's changing, this is a great book to have, gives you a chance to reflect on yourself. Think about how you want to keep your brain alive and well. 800-525-9917. You can go online at KALW.org.
And here at Your Call, we offer so many different topics to think about to keep your brain engaged. So as you tune in to Your Call every day, you're actually doing that work to keep your brain alive and healthy on into middle age.
So and beyond.
And beyond. 1-800-525-9917.
Or KALW.org. We're going to be returning to Sandeep's conversation with Barbara Streisand in just a moment, but make that call. And thank you.
Back. I'm Sandeep Roy. For those of you just joining us, this is Your Call. We are podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org, where you can listen to past shows and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Charles Bowden, author of Murder City, The Ciudad Juarez and the Global Economy's New Killing Fields. And Friday is our media roundtable discussion. But today, we are talking about the middle-aged mind. We're joined by Barbara Streisand, author of The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind. And we wanted to invite you to join the conversation. If you're between the ages of 40 and 70, how do you think your mind compares now to your younger years? Is your brain stronger now? Do you feel more capable in some ways and less capable in others? We'd love to know. And do you have questions about, you know, fish oil or blueberries or that glass of red wine people say you should drink every day? Here's your chance to find out. You can join the conversation with Barbara Streisand at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255 or by email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go straight to a caller, Shan in San Francisco. Hi, Shan.
Hi, Sandy, and your guest sounds like she's on the right track. I, frankly, am about to enter my 81st year, and I absolutely, at 70, made a discovery about the fact that I had ADHD and always had. That was remarkable because it made me understand why I didn't focus very well, but it also helped me become a member of the Intergenerational Poetry Project, writing poetry with fourth graders and elders, and learning that there is a poet inside of all of us. So I have a quick share. It came back to me recently. Here it is. Is foresight better than hindsight? Insight somewhere between the two. Oh, at this age and stage of the game, any sight will do.
Great. Thank you for that. So, Shan, let me ask you, so how do you keep your brain active?
I just enjoy every moment. If you ask me what is my favorite holiday, it's Thanksgiving every day. And as an itinerant poet, things come to me and I share them with people that I come in contact with. And I think it's just having enthusiasm and being a peaceful warrior and an authentic eccentric.
Do you feel more optimistic now?
I think I was born with an optimistic bit, but I went through a lot as a child of the Depression. I learned how to be more than conservative. I learned to appreciate everything.
Well, Barbara, do you have any questions for Shan?
Well, it's interesting to me that we turn to poetry, you know, with ADHD. It's interesting that many poets do feel they have a little bit of ADHD, because one of the traits of ADHD is not filtering out a lot of the stimulus. So poets let it all in, and then they focus it for us in their own poetic minds. And so I think it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's true. We may be overly sensitive, but the ability to put words out there for sharing is so important. And this is a quick share, a haiku, which is my favorite form, 17 syllables about the times that we are living in. And here it is. Fortune is fickle. She'll leave you in a pickle. But don't they taste good?
Well, thank you for that, Shan, and thank you for calling in. Barbara, you know, just listening to Shan and how cheery it is, I was thinking of something you have talked about in your book, The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, which I found really remarkable, and that is you say that our brains might be neurologically set up to actually make us more optimistic as we age.
Yes. And I think this goes against the stereotypes we have of middle age. You know I was in my 20s, thought that it would all be over by middle age. It would be all kind of doom and gloom or midlife crisis and all that. But what they find, there's some unbelievably good science that's been done out at Stanford and UCI and UC Santa Cruz, and a lot of it coming out of California, actually, that show that a couple of things. They actually look inside brains, and they find the part of our brain that is set up to actually respond to the negative. This is the amygdala. This is the part of the brain that's very primitive and is set up to fight or flight and find the snake in the grass. And it's the part that gets all excited when we have to talk to our boss or see a scary person on an airplane. And that part actually starts to respond less to the negative and more to the positive as we age. And it's really counterintuitive, really. And it surprised even the scientists, I think, that saw this. And there's Laura Carstensen at Stanford has labeled this the positivity effect. And
so what does it mean it responds less to the negative?
It means that, for instance, when they put people in brain scanners and the younger people are shown very positive images and negative images, their amygdala actually responds more to the negative when you're younger, and it changes as you enter middle age and go on. And you don't do it consciously, but Dr. Carstensen thinks that it's a motivated choice. We realize we have less time left, and we kind of orient our lives and our brains to act and respond differently. And there's a long-held theory called the grandmother thesis that talks about how if an elder in the group has this positive outlook, that this may have evolutionary benefits in terms of they have a get-up-and-go attitude and they can better take care of the younger people in their care. And I know I have an 86-year-old aunt out there in Monterey, and she's unbelievably optimistic and has a great deal of energy. And just by her very existence, she has helped. I've watched it. Generations stay together and thrive. So I do think there's something to it, that through evolution, we have decided that this is a good way to use our brains.
So what does that mean for if our brains are in fact responding more to positive things as we age? What does that mean to the established notions of the midlife crisis?
Well, the midlife crisis, I did look into this, and the empty nest syndrome as well. And these are narratives that we have in our culture that, you know, we have a very age-focused culture. And it's just these ideas that as soon as you enter middle life, it's going to be all kind of depressing and things. And the midlife crisis was based on very, very slim science. Some guy decided to study artists, actually, a small group that he picked himself, and he decided they changed their styles in midlife. And believe it or not, from that small study and another small study of some men in Connecticut, you know, maybe 40 men, 40 years ago, they decided that that this was happening. People were getting depressed in middle age, but in general, when they do the big studies now of thousands of people, they now have data from 40 years studying the same people and things like the Seattle Longitudinal Study, and those results just now just coming out, and they're finding that the sense of well-being actually increases and in some cases peaks, men, women, all occupations, on average at age 65. So I think those narratives that we all kind of have in our heads are actually based on nothing and aren't true. When they look at the midlife crisis, they find that it's very rare. And the people who do have crises in middle age, a large proportion of them are the kind of people who had crises throughout their lives.
Well, I would love to get our listeners in on this. What do you think about the midlife crisis of the empty nest syndrome? Do you think they are real parts of the middle age experience of yours or people around you? You can join the conversation about the secret life of the grown-up brain with Barbara Strouch at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. How are you experiencing your own mind as it ages? You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org or 866-798-8255. Let me talk a little bit about the science that you talk about in your book. One of the things you say is this thing which you mentioned before, bilateralization, that the brain in middle age uses both hemispheres at once. So we didn't always use both sides of our brains?
No. I mean, obviously, we use all of our brains. That's a myth that we use only 10% of our brains. Our brains are pretty active all the time. But what they find is when you're younger, you will use, for instance, one side of your brain to learn a word, and you'll use the other side of your brain to recall that word, a different task, really. And when they watch brains confronted with the same kind of problem in middle age and beyond, they watch them use two sides of their brains to both learn the word and recall the word.
But why is that better? Couldn't it just be that the brain is weaker and needs to compensate, and so it uses two sides, whereas before it could make do with just one side?
Exactly. There is clearly that there, when they first found this, there was some worry. They thought, well, that must portend a deficit somewhere. You're perfectly right. So, as they looked into it even further, they found out it is the people who are cognitively at the top of the heap. These are the sharpest minds that are doing this, rather than the other way around. And so what they think is that those people have more access to different parts of their brain. They're capable of using more real estate. Their brains are used to powering up if they need to. And so when they find out they do need to, remember there are some deficits. Some things could be a little weaker here and there in middle age and beyond. But those brains who are alive and active actually use more of themselves, and they start to power up. And this, again, goes against what scientists thought. They thought that our brains would just start to fade away and actually use less of themselves as they age. And, people with good active brains do the opposite.
So are we going to need to just re-examine what our definition of smart is in light of what we're finding out about the grown-up brain?
Well, smart is a relative term, of course, but they do find that people who, there is some correlation with people who have very what they call efficient brains. And they, when they watch their brains work, they often are people who can easily, without using much brain energy, go up and again use that prefrontal cortex, that part right behind our forehead, this elite part of our brains, our frontal lobes. And these people's brains seem to more efficiently, with less effort, go up and use that part of their brain when they need to. And as we age, what we want to do is keep those pathways open, again, to those that frontal cortex, and keep challenging our brain so that we are forced to use those pathways and go up and grab the frontal lobes to do what we need to do. And that means we need to work our brains pretty hard. And one of my favorites is that one way to do this, to keep your brain sharp, is to actually just talk to people you disagree with.
Well, that's what we do on this show every day. So hopefully there will be people, both people who agree with us and disagree with us. That's Barbara Strouch, the author of The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, the surprising talents of the middle-aged mind, and we wanted to invite you to join the conversation as well. What do you think is the most surprising talent you've found about the middle-aged mind? You can join the conversation at 866-798-8255. We'll be back to find out how to keep our brains more agile after this break.
You know, I find that it's important, as my brain changes, to keep lists, generally not more than three items on them. So I'm going to give you three items to think about. First, our spring membership drive here at KALW ends tomorrow at 6 p.m. So if you've been waiting to make that call to 800-525-9917 or to go online to KALW.org, now is the time. Show your support for your call and KALW. Second, we do have Barbara Strouch's The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, and if you've got one, you'll want to read it. It's yours for a $70 contribution. Finally, in this hour, your support will be doubled.
And as one of our callers earlier in the hour, Shan, said that being enthusiastic and being a peaceful warrior is the way that she keeps her mind healthy and engaged. And this is actually a perfect place to do that. Here at Your Call, we bring you stimulating conversations about the world. We engage you, and we also always search for positive solutions. So Your Call is like your brain vitamin for the day. So keep your brains engaged by listening to Your Call and supporting us with a $70 pledge and getting Barbara Strouch's book, The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, 1-800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. Susan Boyle in Oakland, a volunteer, a supporter of this station, has put up $500 to challenge other folks who care about this program. She said, I want this to be in the Your Call Hour. So if you, like Susan, depend on Your Call, appreciate it, and understand that only KALW would launch this program, this is the time to call. 800-525-9917. We've already had great response this hour. I see we have an open line, though, so please make the call now. 800-525-9917. KALW.org, also a great place to go. It's about keeping the information and ideas flowing, keeping your prefrontal cortex healthy. I didn't even know I had one before this program. If you want to learn more about it, make a call, 800-525-9917, or go online to KALW.org. Your support makes everything we do here possible. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Sandeep Roy, and this is Your Call. Today, we're talking about the secret life of the grown-up brain, the surprising talents of the middle-aged mind with Barbara Strouch, who is the health editor with the New York Times and the author of the book, The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain. And we wanted to invite you to join the conversation as well. What associations do you have with middle age? What do you, if you consider yourself middle-aged, what are the things you find yourself forgetting or less easily able to do? On the other hand, in what ways do you feel your brain is stronger now? And what do you think about this idea of the midlife crisis? I know I read things all the time about, oh, do this, do that, it'll promote antioxidants for the brain. Do you have questions about that? Whether you should have blueberries or that glass of red wine, or do they really do anything? You can join the conversation at 866-798-8255 or by email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Barbara Strouch, one of the things you say in this book that was one of the most encouraging stories ever to be told about the brain involves a dead nun. Can you tell us that story?
Yes. Well, the nun studies are quite amazing. And what we're talking about here is they did a lot of studies on nuns who donated their brains after they died. And what they found was there were nuns who were the highest educated, actually had could take care of themselves longer, even though when they opened up their brains, some of them had actually advanced Alzheimer's. And so they tried to figure out how this could happen. How could someone be cognitively quite sharp, and yet when they actually looked at their brains were full of the telltale plaques of Alzheimer's? And what they think is happening is that there is this idea called cognitive reserve, and that is kind of a brain buffer, if you will. And it means that if your brain is active and alive and healthy in general, that when disease hits it or even the effects of normal aging, that there'll be more brain power actually to ward off the outward effects of that aging or that disease. There's nothing Of course, it's going to keep you from getting a disease. No one says that, you know, being educated will keep you from getting demented, because people with, you know, doesn't really correlate that way. Very highly intelligent people do suffer from Alzheimer's. But what they do find is that if you can build up some of this cognitive reserve, you might very well be able to kind of fake it longer and take care of yourself longer. And that is quite encouraging. It means that, you know, there's more parts of our brains that we can call on to help us get around those deficits when they come.
And this has nothing to do with the sort of specialized lives that nuns lead. You don't have to get into a cloister in order to build the reserve.
The thing that was good about the nuns is that they were very good to study, because they didn't smoke or drink or do really bad things to their brain, so they could sort out, you know, what was really having an impact. And that's where they first found this correlation with high levels of education and what they call cognitive reserve. But they've also seen it with high levels of leisure activities, complex leisure activities. Exercise is also thought to build cognitive reserve, because it keeps oxygen flowing and keeps more parts of the brain healthy. So, again, they're also trying to teach people to develop it, actually, and, again, keep the pathways and the connections to the frontal cortex open, so that when we are assaulted by disease or aging, we have a better, you know, if you keep your knees in shape when you're running, they'll be able to withstand it better, and that's the idea.
Let's go to a caller, David in San Rafael. Hi, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a quick comment that in my 50th year of life, and having recently gone through a death-defying disease and coming through the other side of it, what I've noticed is that an ability to choose empathy and compassion exists in a way that I never thought it would. And this feels like it's been in part a chemical change, as well as obviously a spiritual and emotional one. And I'm wondering if there's any credibility to that. And I'll take my response off the air.
Thank you, David.
Well, I think that's very interesting. And I think it's well documented. And people who go through and face life-threatening illnesses often come out the other side, in some ways having a different perspective on the world. Of course, it can manifest itself in lots of different ways, but I think that the brain is more automatically prone toward empathy, as the caller says, and also looking at sometimes the more positive aspects of life, because, again, you've gained this perspective. And where is the perspective gained but in your brain? And I think it can change your brain in many ways forever. And so many people report that they, after facing something like this, say, you know, small things don't bother them. It sounds like a cliche, but it actually can change your worldview in a very big way.
Let's go to another caller, Bruce in Berkeley. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. I was interested in knowing what the current state of the research is on the effectiveness of statins to prevent Alzheimer's.
Well, we do know here at the New York Times. We look into that quite deeply almost every week, actually. And there was a recent conference at the National Institutes of Health, for instance, when they tried to figure out if there's anything we know of that prevents Alzheimer's. And I'm afraid not. At the moment, there is nothing on the horizon that we know for sure prevents Alzheimer's. So that's kind of depressing, but we do know that there are hints out there, and there certainly are hints that one of the bad actors in the brain and one problem that may lead to dementia, although they're not quite sure yet, is inflammation. And statins will cut down on that inflammation. So anything we do to sort of keep our brains healthy in terms of repair mechanisms and inflammation is a bad actor in the brain, as it is in our bodies. If our brains are chronically inflamed, we have a lot of repair systems that just keep going and going and going, and there can be a lot of collateral damage. So certainly there is some thought, and we've reported on some hints here and there that statins can perhaps help with Alzheimer's, but I think the the latest science is we just can't tell for sure yet.
Have you seen, Barbara Strauch, research in the scientists that you've been talking to about, you know, these different things you hear about all the time about how to keep the brain healthy in terms of diet, for example, you know, whether you should be taking more omega-3s, fish mm-hmm. oils, blueberries, glass of red wine? Is this all anecdotal at this point?
No, it's not all anecdotal. There's some pretty good science behind a lot of this. And what the idea is, I mean, to start with antioxidants, is that when the brain works, it produces what's called a free radical, kind of a damaging molecule. And in the natural repair systems in the brain, an antioxidant comes and gets rid of that free radical. And so the idea is that can we just keep sort of pouring these antioxidants into our bodies and boost that repair system and keep it going as we age? And in theory, it is certainly true. And in animals, they've, you know, had old beagles that have been eating this kind of high diet of antioxidants, which are the vegetables high in color, green and yellow, and fruits and high color fruits. And those animals, older dogs, for instance, learn tricks faster than fast as the young ones. And so there is a lot of anecdotal and really good solid science in animals. And what they're trying to do is replicate it in people.
So old dogs can learn tricks. Can older people learn tricks? They just learn it differently?
Well, yeah, I think that most of the scientists now, again, this idea that they used to have that we lost all our brain cells. Nobody even bothered to study the brain as it aged. But now that they know that we don't, It does mean that those brain cells can be influenced somehow. And so believe me, there is now a great deal of money chasing this idea that perhaps we will be able to find some sort of magic bullet, you know, pour a lot of antioxidants into a pill, or, you know, get that 15,000 glasses of red wine into a pill and actually have something for our brains that will help. And they are chasing this very, very fast and trying to figure out if they can figure it out.
I'd be really sad if they found a pill for red wine and you didn't need to have a glass of red wine anymore.
Yeah, well, 15,000 glasses a day is a lot to swallow.
Well, let's go to a caller, Suzanne in Carmel. Hi, Suzanne.
Hello. I was interested in how disagreeing with someone who has a very different opinion it sort of creates an emotion, which would be a different part of the brain, I understand, the amygdala, that one gets defensive. I mean, I think there's a feeling of protecting and defensiveness that arouses the strong feelings. Doesn't that interfere with the cognitive, the frontal lobes? So how would it be that disagreeing with someone improves the use of the frontal lobe?
Thanks for that question, Suzanne.
That's a good question. But what they find is that, you know, people who, when we're talking about how adults learn and how you really can develop your brain as a grown-up, you know, when you're younger, your brain is very good at accumulating facts and things. And when you're older, that's not something it's as good at, number one. And number two, people who study adult learning say that what the brain is ready for is its next sort of developmental step. The brain by middle age has accumulated a lot of assumptions. That's what it's set up to do about the world. And so if we really want to let our brains learn and grow, we need to challenge those assumptions. Now, that doesn't mean we need to get in big fistfights with people or, you know, have heated arguments so much, but open our minds perhaps to ideas that will challenge the assumptions that we've built up. And what they say is kind of shake up the cognitive egg a little bit. And
I love that, shake up the cognitive egg.
Yeah, you don't have to change your mind. Nobody's saying that, but it does perhaps help you to, you know, when you reflect on what you've learned from somebody who disagrees with you, it can add a kind of layer of complexity to your own thinking. And that's the kind of learning that our middle-aged brains are set up to do, are really good at, and actually thrive on.
You know, I am going to take that as our motto for your call, shaking up the cognitive egg. But
yes,
let's go to Linda in Santa Cruz. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question about the research that you are aware of, looking at this huge increase in the last 15 years, of electrosmog that we have because, and what effect that's having on research about the aging brain, because, you know, we have Wi-Fi and wireless phones and cell phones and all of these different frequencies, you know, that we are just bombarded by now, having an effect on health. And I'm just wondering about research that's been done for brain development in that regard.
Thank you, Linda.
Well, I mean, I think that jury's out on that. We just had the big World Health Organization study of cell phones, for instance, and, you know, it was inconclusive, I'm afraid. They found that, you know, when they looked across populations, that, you know, in some cases people who use cell phones a lot, cancer rates increased, and in some cases they decreased. So they came out thinking we just can't tell yet. So I'm afraid that there's a great deal we don't know about microwave radiation and all the stuff, as you said, that are bombarding our brains. We haven't seen any science yet that shows that it has a real clear slam dunk bad effect on our brains, and they've been looking for it. So there's been hints here and there, but whenever they really look deeply, they can't quite find it. So I think we don't know yet.
Linda, thank you for that call. Barbara, you know, this book is full of all the research that people are doing all over the country about the middle-aged brain, and people are finding out a lot of surprising things about it. But culturally, are we ready for the middle-aged brain and all that it can accomplish?
Well, that's a good question, too, because I know we've just been through this recession. We're still in it, really, and we've watched a lot of, you know, even my own company, you know, there's some very vibrant and alive, you know, 60 and 70-year-old brains that walked out the door. And I do think that as a culture, we are very easy to dismiss, you know, the real talents and, you know, the benefits of having brains like this around to help us solve problems. These are the brains that are very good at solving problems, even tackling, even having the confidence to tackle the big problems. And I think those are the kind of brains that we're letting walk out the door. And I think culturally we kind of have to wake up to the fact that we're losing out on some of the best brains of our lives, actually.
We have an email from Monica in Oakland who says that, you know, she went to make an appointment for her daughter's hair for the prom and couldn't remember the name of the stylist. She'd used it a couple of times before and said to my daughter, Jane, Jean, Joan, Leanne. And I knew with a rush of amazement that I was correct. And indeed, it was Leanne. At 54, I feel very humbled by my failings at remembering people and names. And yet this amazing feat of memory, relatively speaking, happened. You know, and she was wondering what happens, what explains these wide swings in terms of ability in memory. We're out of time almost. Thank you for that email, Monica. But Barbara Strouch, you classify yourself as middle-aged before you go. How do you feel about your own brain now that you've done research and written this book?
Well, you know, again, I can't remember what I had for breakfast. you know, I have much more respect, I think, for my middle-aged brain. You know, I, too, was worried about where all those names go, you know, up in the sky, laughing at us maybe. But on balance, I just, you know, I just talk to everybody, so many people that talk about how competent they feel. And I'm surrounded by middle-aged brains who are quite competent. And that's, I think, what we need to do is appreciate our brains and have a little more respect for them.
Well, you may not remember what you had for breakfast, but you are the deputy science editor and health and medical science editor at the New York Times, Barbara Strouch. And you did write this book, The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind. Thank you for spending the hour with us.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm joined in the studio now by Matt Martin.
That's right. I'm general manager here at KALW, joining Sandeep here in the studio for a few minutes on the second to the last day of our spring membership drive, asking you to do two things that'll feel good. One, support KALW. And second, if you feel like it, get yourself a copy of The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain. This is a fascinating and, to me, it sounds like a pretty fun book about the surprising talents of the middle-aged mind. If you've got one, if your mind, your brain, whatever it is that's going on in your cranium has you wondering what's happening here, this is a great opportunity to learn more and support the public radio station that keeps your brain alive and well. 800-525-9917. KALW.org. That's a $70 contribution to get this book as your thanks. And also, we are in a matching period. Susan Boyle of Oakland, a listener just like you, said, I'm going to put up $500 and challenge my fellow Your Call listeners to show their support. Now is the time to do it. act. We've just got a few minutes. This is the only hour we're going to be offering the Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain as a thank you gift.
The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain by Barbara Strout. Matt, you're right. It is a really fun book to read because it is one of those things that takes the science and makes you really understand what's going on. And I was really surprised by a lot of the things that I found out reading about it. And Barbara was able to touch on some of that over the course of this hour. But there is a lot more, I think, that people would enjoy discovering. And I know there are a lot of middle-aged brains out there, as well as a lot of people who are looking towards middle age right now.
And people who come to public radio, who come to KALW, want to discover. They're up for challenging ideas. They're up for having that, what was it, the cognitive egg?
Shaking up the cognitive egg.
If you support that kind of radio that crosses a lot of boundaries, that does different things, that any given hour you're not positive what you're going to get, show your support. 800-525-9917. Here at KALW, we like to make radio for the growing brain and the grown-up brain.
We make radio for the grown-up brain, and we sometimes discover surprising talents of the middle-aged mind, both in ourselves and in the people who call into this show. So we'd be delighted to get you a copy of Barbara Strauch's The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain for their $70 pledge. 800-525-9917, or you can go to klw.org. You're not going to need a whole lot of neurons to do this little transaction. It's quite simple.
But you've got them.
You can actually save on some of those neurons for other more complex things, like remembering what you had for breakfast if you choose to do that. But you can do it quite easily. 800-525-9917. And for $70, just for this hour, we'll get you The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind by New York Times health editor Barbara Strauch.
Or you can go to KALW.org. I know a lot of folks listen to KALW while they're at work, whether that's in an office. I heard from a seamstress the other day who supports this station. She listens while she works, or maybe you're at home working there. Wherever you are, you can go to KALW.org. The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind, yours for a $70 contribution. You can also call one of the great folks who, most of whom I got to say, got middle-aged brains themselves here in our phone room, 800-525-9917. Make that connection. And, Sandeep, one thing that Barbara was saying at the end of the program when you were talking to her that I thought was interesting, she was saying, you know, as people mature and their brains mature, they actually have knowledge that gives them confidence to tackle big problems. And that idea that, hey, here's talent, here's people who could change our society, we need to believe in and invite into the conversation. Here at KALW, we try to bring young people onto the air, the voices of middle-aged people, and older folks too. We heard from Shan, 81 years strong. 800-525-9917. We're broad radio. We're for the whole community, and you make it possible.
And Barbara says in the book, midlife crisis is a myth. That was a revelation to me. But I think, Matt, the bigger thing is in our culture, we often allow ourselves, as she says, to be aged by culture, mm-hmm. by thinking and these preconceptions that are out there. And at Your Call, we sometimes try to shake up those preconceptions a little bit and invite all kinds of people onto the air to talk to each other and to the guests, whether they agree with them or disagree with them or not. And if that kind of exchange stimulates our grown-up brains, then this is the perfect book for you. The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain, The Surprising Talents of the Middle-Aged Mind, $70 pledge just for this hour by Barbara Strauch, 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
800-525-9917. We are in the last 2 days of our drive, less than, I can't do the math really quickly here, but less
because
than...
if you're middle-aged...
No, it's not that. Barbara Strauch proved it's not about the middle-aged brain. We're all doing our best to keep it together, but we're closing down this drive tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. So we ask for your support now. This is a great opportunity. Your support will be doubled. Susan Boyle, a Your Call listener and supporter, has put up $500. We want to make sure that match is made. 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. We're almost out of time for this hour, but you can still continue pledging by calling 800-525-9917 or going online, klw.org. And we would be delighted for $70 pledge to get you Barbara Strauch's book, The Secret Life of the Grown-Up Brain. You will be surprised to find out what kind of surprising talents of the middle-aged mind you might possess.